When we spoke with David McReynolds during the first week of the war, he was swamped with phone calls from men and women in the military seeking advice on how to stay out of combat. McReynolds is the co-secretary of the War Resisters League, which he joined 30 years ago. He's a longtime peace activist. We called him back today to get his reaction to the end of the fighting. Before the war started, President Bush said this war would not be like Vietnam. And sure enough, this war was quick, and military victory was decisive. I asked McReynolds if he thinks the war in the Gulf will change American attitudes toward war.
It may well do that, and for the worse. It may suggest to us that the future wars are ones that we can win easily at low cost, without our looking at the fact that if there is a God in heaven, that to that God every life is equally valuable, whether it's Vietnamese or American, whether it's Iraqi or Saudi or Kuwaiti or American. And if we're counting the cost only by the number of Americans killed, we may make the mistake of thinking we can play the game of Panama again, as we did in Kuwait. I'm glad the casualties on our side were low. I know they were very high on the side of the Iraqis. And I tend to look at all the casualties as a total.
How effective do you think the peace movement was during the war?
We failed. I mean, let's accept the reality. I have to accept that reality in order to look at the future realistically. We tried to prevent a war, and we didn't. People died because we were not strong enough as a movement to persuade George Bush to stick to sanctions. And I'm not exempting Saddam Hussein. I look at this as a game of two men who had to prove something and proved it at terrible, terrible cost to civilian populations. And, you know, all of the money that we spend in Saudi Arabia is money that, in liberating Kuwait, is money that Bush said we couldn't have for hospitals and roads and schools because it wasn't there, but he could find it for that war. So we're paying a price, too.
Do you have any critiques of the way the peace movement worked and the tactics that it used during the short war?
No, I basically am pretty proud of the movement. I think it pulled itself together very well. I think it mobilized extremely quickly. I think some of the national leadership was not as clear as it should have been on the fact that Iraq was wrong to invade Kuwait. I think a few people were so angry at Bush they didn't recognize that Saddam Hussein was a dictator, on a point on which the War Resisters League has been clear from the beginning. But I think the broad range of the movement across the country, from San Francisco through Chicago to Seattle to New York, has been very affirmative, very creative, and not controlled by anybody. And it's been quite clear that the main issue was oil, and that was the wrong thing to send American troops into the Gulf for.
What can you tell us about people who deserted during the war? Did you come in contact with a lot of people who opposed this particular war?
Yes,
were already in the military,
yes,
and deserted?
We have had to take on an additional military counselor full-time here, a man who was a Vietnam veteran, and who also was a deserter from Vietnam, and having seen military service there and knowing what Vietnam was about, he deserted and has been on our staff here counseling military men. There have been a lot of men coming in, dozens of men, most of them Latino and African-American men, but many of them also working-class young whites. There have been a lot coming in who are deserters that we've been talking to and counseling.
What options did deserters have? What are some of the routes that they took to get out of the war?
Their only real option was to say that they were objectors on grounds of conscience to military service. And the military said, why didn't you think about this before you enlisted? You enlisted freely, and having received the benefits of your training, now you've decided that you have an objection to the war. But the answer, of course, is people rarely think about things until they're confronted with them directly, and going into the service, it seemed a kind of abstract thing until it came time for war. And I think that the men who said they would, if necessary, desert or face trial, and there are a number of men now facing courts-martial, or courts-martials, whatever that is, whether it's plural or singular, for refusing orders, these are men of considerable courage who made their choice late, should have made it sooner, and they will now face one of three things. Either they'll face a brig for a court-martial, they'll face prison for deserting and being arrested, or in many cases they are going to win their classification as COs and be given a discharge. Those are the three three courses open to them.
I'm wondering if you have more personal confidence in the American military than you had before. And I'm thinking specifically of the very human face that General Schwarzkopf has showed, especially in the briefing yesterday where he talked about how no one will be happier than he when there is a ceasefire. And really, every time he's made a public appearance, he's talked about the tragic cost of human life during the war. And I think it's something you don't always hear from military commanders, who are sometimes much more cold and exact in the way they discuss war.
I don't think of the military as the enemy. My father was a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force Army Reserve and saw active duty in World War II in India and China. My grandfather was a lieutenant colonel in the Army, saw active combat service in the Spanish-American War. So I know what military men are like, and they're not the enemy. They're my father and my grandfather. I don't share this disdain of the military. But I also don't think the military is able always to face the human cost, and they use a lot of code words. They talk about collateral damage when they're talking about children that have been blown to bits. I think that's partly because they're human beings and they can't cope with the reality. The people who make the best pacifists, Terry, are men or women who've been in combat. They come the closest to understanding why pacifists are pacifists.
What do you think are some of the unanswered questions that we're facing now?
One of the unanswered questions is what happens in a world where the U.S. has shown such extraordinary military power? Will it now move against Cuba? Will it now move against Yemen? Will the American public support that? Are we going to see a repeat of this kind of thing, Panama, so on, all over the world? What happens when the Cold War ends and we find out there's one strong military power that doesn't seem to have a check on it? That's the first worry in my mind. How do we limit the military power of the U.S. government?
David McReynolds is the co-secretary of the War Resisters League. He spoke to us from his office in Manhattan. This is Fresh Air.